This is Echo Zoe Radio.
This is Echo Zoe Radio, episode 67 for November 2013 with Kent Crockett on pastor abuse.
Welcome to Echo Zoe Radio, the podcast outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries, where you'll hear about important topics affecting the church today. Our primary goal is to explore a variety of issues while remaining faithful to God and His Word. Stay with us for the next hour as your host, Andy Olson, shares his conversation with this month's guest. Here's your host, Andy Olson.
Thanks for joining me. I'm Andy Olson, and this is episode 67. The November 2013 episode of Echo Zoe Radio. My guest for this episode is Kent Crockett. Kent is an author, editor, and proofreader, and has served as pastor in several churches. Kent authored a book entitled Pastor Abusers, When Sheep Attack Their Shepherd, which serves as the basis of our discussion for this episode. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode. We'll have a detailed outline of the discussion and a list of scriptures referenced. You'll find them at echozoe.com/67. Also, be sure to check out the information page at echozoe.com for the teaching on logic that I'm doing with Pastor Eric Dalma. At the time of this recording, we have finished the first half of the class, which I taught on common logical fallacies, and Eric is about to begin the second half, in which he'll talk about formal logic. You can get all of the details by clicking on the banner at the top of the homepage. You can also purchase individual sessions as digital video downloads as they become available for just $2 each, and it's a great way to support Echo Zoe Ministries.
Are you a fan of social media? Echo Zoe Ministries is on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Like, follow, and circle us to keep up with the latest from Echo Zoe Ministries and Echo Zoe Radio. See echozoe.com for direct links.
With that, here's my discussion with Kent Crockett. Welcome, Kent. Thanks very much for coming on with me this evening to talk about kind of some more of the troubling aspects that go on within a church. You're author of a book called Pastor Abusers, and we're going to spend the hour of our interview talking about different things that happen to pastors, kind of some of the more painful side of ministry tonight.
Okay.
Why don't I start just by asking, how was it that this book came to be?
Well, I was in the ministry a number of years. I planted a church in Kansas. I was pastor there for 18 years, and then I had gone to a different church. I was guest speaking, and I was guest speaking at a church, and they kept asking me to come back. We've been looking for a pastor for a couple of years, and you're the guy. You know, they told me everything I wanted to hear. And we interviewed, and we felt like it was a good match from what they were telling me and what my gifts were and what we were supposed to do. So we kind of laid out a plan. Here's what we want to do with this church, and they were all excited. Well, I found out that after about 6 months into this, the church was growing, and people were coming into the church. Matter of fact, a lot of people were coming in the church. It was exciting. There was an excitement there. Sunday school grew, offerings grew, but I noticed that there was a group of people in the church that didn't seem to be happy about it, and I couldn't quite understand it, and it was the people who ran the church. And I had done everything right. You know, I treated everybody nice. I worked hard at preaching the word, following up on people. And I started finding out that they were getting other people to try to turn against me. I couldn't figure out why. It just didn't make sense to me. I thought, man, this is, you know, isn't this what we're supposed to be doing here? And so one day, one evening, my wife and I went to the mall, and I ran into one of the deacon's wives. And I say, well, where's Paul tonight? And she said, well, they're having a deacon's meeting. Didn't you know? And I said, no, there's the meeting's at our house. And she didn't know either what was going on. But what had happened, the deacons had gotten together in a secret meeting to get rid of me. And I was just puzzled by that. And so the deacons called the meeting, and I came in to this meeting, and I said, this church could reach, you know, thousands of people for the Lord. Can't you see what the Lord's doing here? And one of the deacons yelled out, "We don't care about that." They didn't want to reach people for the Lord. And then I started realizing, wait a minute, this isn't about reaching people for Jesus Christ and seeing lives changed. And it was about, in their situation, it was about power and control. They were running the church. They were, a lot of them were related to each other. Mm-hmm. And they could see that the new people coming in, was they were losing influence is what it was.
Okay.
And so, and I thought, well, let's try to work this out. And I found out they didn't want to work it out, and they ended up forcing me out to resign. And I can remember cleaning out my office and breaking down crying and saying, God, what is going on? How could this happen? I remember saying, God, how could this possibly happen to me when I have worked hard, I've treated everybody with love, preached your word, you've been blessing, and this small group of people are so mean, and they're running me out. I don't understand that. And I went home, and I found another pastor that had written a paper. I found him on the internet called Pastor Abuse. Found out the same thing had happened to him. And I remembered some of my friends had been forced out of their churches just for doing their jobs and doing, you know, what God called them to do. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what, I feel like, you know, I write books. I've written 8 books. I have 2 out this year. And at this time, one of them had been a best-selling book. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to write a book about this because I think there's something here that needs to be said. And so for about 2 years, I wrote this book and interviewed. I started getting other pastors' names, and I actually interviewed over 30 pastors who had been through this, and I put the stories of what happened to them in the book. But Andy, here's the thing that was amazing to me as I started interviewing people from all across the United States. It didn't matter what denomination they were from or what state they lived in. The same thing was happening to them in the same and I only interviewed people who I did the research that they were godly men who were doing their jobs. They didn't do anything immoral to get forced out. So there was a pattern there, and it made me realize there's something terribly wrong going on in our churches when this is happening, not just in one denomination, but all across the board.
What were some of those common threads like that you'd see all these different pastors go through? What's the process that this goes through?
Well, what normally happens is that it starts off well. You know, your listeners need to understand is how hard it is to be a pastor.
Yeah.
It is so hard to please everybody. You know, you just can't, you can't please everybody. You know, you think about it, husband and wife don't even agree on things. So, you know, get several hundred people together in one congregation, you're not going to agree on everything. But hopefully you're going to agree on the main things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can agree on the main things, you've got to give the freedom to disagree on other things.
Yeah.
It's God's church, it's not our church.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I want to make clear, too, is I really believe that pastors have a high calling, but we have a high responsibility to live with integrity, mm-hmm. and, you know, we need to be above reproach and that sort of thing. And these pastors that I interviewed really did have that from checking on their background to find out about them, that they were really people that loved the Lord, but they were forced out of their churches. And many of them, you know, here's the thing. When you're forced out of your church, it's usually over for a pastor, mm-hmm. because they're probably not going to get hired by somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's real easy to get fired for being a pastor because I know too many people that have been. But here's the sad thing about it. A lot of them will go to college for 4 years, and then you go into seminary for another 3 years or more, preparing for ministry. And then you go into the ministry, and you do your best, and then you find out it's not like going to a job, a secular job, where you just do your job and go home. You have this family of all of these people, and it really depends on them, loving you to make it. Mm-hmm. And if you're forced out, you're fired or whatever, you're thrown into a financial crisis like you wouldn't believe, because you've been trained to do ministry. A lot of people have been doing ministry all this time, and then when they lose their job, they think, well, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
So a lot of people have to go back, find a secular job, go work at the grocery store, where a lot of them, they start at the bottom and they have a family, and it's very hard for them to make it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of a little bit about what happens, but the statistics show that, a lot of pastors are being what I call forced out. Means basically there is usually a group within the church that will make sure that there's enough opposition against him that he cannot continue to pastor. And in a lot of churches, as I've done research on this, there's a history within the church that the pastor will only be there so long before he's gone. Mm-hmm. They'll give him 3 years or whatever. Baptist churches are really bad about it. I come from the Baptist tradition. You're there 3 years and they're ready for you to go and get somebody else in. But that's real hard on a pastor to move every 3 years,
Yeah. I want to be very careful with what I say, because there's some firsthand experience that I have with the subject of the book that I don't want to interject any more than I need to, because I don't want to open wounds that don't need to be opened. I'm very good friends with our pastor. We have a preacher who isn't formally called a pastor, but he preaches just as much as the pastor does. I'm good friends with both of them. I have a third pastor is on the board of the ministry that I would consider myself to be pretty good friends with as well. And so I've got pastor friends. I've got others as well that I would say are pretty good friends. And sometimes it takes these difficult situations before your eyes are opened as a layperson that, your pastor's a human being and he's got problems and he's got issues and hurts and difficulties as well. And so that was kind of my motivation with talking about this subject, was because I love my pastor friends, all of them, so much. I want people listening to just be aware of your pastor, not as the leader of your church, which you should already be aware of, but be aware of him as a brother in Christ,
That's somebody, right.
Who has feelings just like anybody else, and problems and difficulties, and he's working through those as he's trying to faithfully preach God's word at your church every Sunday. And if you really love him and care about him, just be aware of what we're talking about tonight, because things can come out of nowhere, and he's going to need some support if that does happen. And so be ready to give your pastor, or if you've got a friend who's a pastor, maybe he doesn't pastor at your church, he pastors at another church, but he's a friend of yours, just be there to be ready to give him support, because we're talking tonight about some difficult things that he's going to need support as much as anybody going through a really big life change.
Well, I think that's very good advice, because I like to tell people, just put yourself in the pastor's shoes. Because it's so easy to look at the pastor and think, well, I don't like the way he preaches. I don't like the way he does this. I don't like the way he does that. And then you're nitpicking him apart and everything. But remember, from the pastor's perspective, you can't please everybody.
Yeah.
And another thing you can't be somebody that you're not. Mm-hmm. God didn't make a Superman where, one person can do, everything, because the Bible tells us that, not everybody's going to have, not one person's going to have all the gifts to do all the ministry, but some people expect that. But, think about it. It's hard enough just to raise a family, not without the pressure.
Yeah.
Of being critiqued every Sunday or whatever. But let me just explain, as I was telling you about when I was forced out of that church, let me just tell you what happened.
Yeah.
After I did that, I sat down and I spent 2 years actually, not continually, but it took me about 2 years to write that book and to get all the information and all the interviews together. And well, during that time, that church, some of the people left the church. They were just really upset. What did he do wrong? Why, you know, why did you get rid of him? And so they ended up hiring another guy to come in. And this other pastor actually lived in my neighborhood, just right around the block. And I met him, and he was a guy in his mid-30s. He had been a missionary. Good guy, great family. He had a great spirit. I mean, I just really liked the guy. Mm-hmm. And we started sharing about our ministry philosophies, and I said, well, that's exactly what I believe. You know, and you know, what it was they hired another guy that was just like me. And I thought, this is so odd. Why would they do that? because he wanted to grow the church too. And well, what happened was, and we've seen this, and I put this in the book, that what happened to the one pastor usually ends up happening to the next pastor. Mm-hmm. Because there's a deeper problem here. And they started going after him, and they began attacking him until he almost had a nervous breakdown. And he came over to my house one night. He says, I almost lost my mind. You just can't believe what they're doing to me. And they about destroyed him and his family. He ended up leaving. The church split, and he ended up leaving. And it's just a sad story. But here, you know, I look at it and I think, you know, what could have been. I really believe that that church could have been one that would have reached thousands of people in that area. I think God was really blessing it. Mm-hmm. And it just took a few people. And let me just say that the guy who was behind all of that wanted to be the pastor. He was a deacon. He put in his name I found out this after I got there, that when they had the search committee, he put his resume in. He wanted to be the pastor, and they turned him down. And so that when I came in, I immediately became his target, and he was the driving force in getting me out and the next guy as well. Wow. So it's kind of sad. This happens in a lot of churches, but it is so painful. One pastor said, you know, when you're forced out, it's like going through a divorce with hundreds of people at once. That's the way he described it. Mm-hmm. And then the guy says, I felt like a knife was put in my heart. You know, it's just a painful, painful thing. And so it's a very difficult thing to be a pastor. And so I hope the people that are listening will say, you know what, maybe I need to pray for my pastor to be nice to him.
Because that's at the top of my list of things I hope to come out of this as well, is people pray for your pastor and just be aware of what he doesn't face now, but what he's may very well face in the future.
Yes. And, you know, and I think another thing to say is that there is no pastor that's going to be that's going to be able to please everybody. He'll probably have a dominant gift. He might be a real compassionate person that loves to visit the hospital. He might be an administrative person who's very good, maybe not strong in preaching, but good in making the church run. Or he might be really good from the pulpit teaching and that sort of thing, but he's not good at other things. And so what people tend to do is look at, well, he's not doing this, rather than going, you know what, God's gifted him to do this. Let's see what we can do to help him with his weaknesses. You know, let's have somebody else do the administration who's better at it than he is. So you understand what I'm saying? That's how the body is supposed to work anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right out of Scripture. Paul says we're not all eyes or ears or toes or feet, and that's... that's part of what he's talking about there. Is everybody needs to use their gifts.
Another thing too, when I'd like people to remember, when you called somebody to come be your pastor. Now I know every church is different. Some they're appointed, you know, and some are called, and you know, there's different ways that pastors get in a situation. But generally, there's some kind of agreement, you know, that this is the person that's supposed to be here to lead us. Well, we have to remember, you know, that God works through, you know, the authority in the church, and that, you know, the pastor is the main shepherd to lead. He's not the only one. You know, there's other elders and things like that. But, you know, there is a spiritual authority that God wants us to respect. I was studying with some other Christian brothers here the other day, and we were talking about when Jesus said the greatest is to be the slave of all. Uh-huh. We were talking about that, you know, the slave of all. And, you know, if you get thinking, you know, there's a difference between a servant and a slave. He said, you know, if you want to be great, be the servant. But if you want to be number one, be the slave. Uh-huh. The slave had no rights. He was property. He did everything his master wanted, and he did it cheerfully if he was a good slave. And he called, and Jesus calls us to have that kind of attitude that we don't have any rights. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, we need to humble ourselves. We need to look up to others. The slave looks up to others, and everybody's important. Everybody, and I'm the least, and they're, you know. We are to regard one another as more important than ourselves. Not that they are more important, but we are to regard those as more important. You know, the thing that I'd like to, not just pastors, but I think all that have positions of authority in the church, mm-hmm. you know, we're all going to face the judgment before God. We're all going to stand before Him and give account for our lives. And that's a fearsome thing. You know, this is let not many of you be teachers, you know, because yeah. you're going to have greater judgment. And there will be a greater judgment, but there also is going to be a greater reward. Yeah. I wrote a book about rewards. I wrote a book called Making Today Count for Eternity and what that will involve, the rewards. So we want to be faithful, whether you're a pastor or in another position of authority. We need to have loving hearts. We need to be humble. Really, that is the key. Really, the ideal leader in a church should be godly, humble, and have integrity, mm-hmm. and loving toward other people. You know, and realize, you know what, God has put me here. I'm accountable before God. I want to treat people well. The golden rule that Jesus talked about, doing to others as you would have them do unto you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we forget that in the church. You know, we don't treat people like we should be treating other people. But anyway, I really believe that God's blessing comes when we humble ourselves, when we live with integrity, and He wants to pour His blessing down through godly authority in the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just authority, godly authority, because there are people in churches, and I've met them, that are just mean as can be almost, and they were in there maybe before I even got to that church, you know. Sure. You think, how did you get in this position, you know? But I was reading one day, and it just came to me. I thought, now I understand this verse in James chapter 5. It says, is there any sick among you, let him call upon the elders of the church, and let him pray, and, you know, the prayer of faith will heal him, and that sort of thing. And I don't want to get into a big thing about healing, but, you know, mm-hmm. but there was something. Why call on the elders to pray? And what hit me was that God wants to pour out His blessing through the authorities in the church on the people. And that's why it's so important to have a godly attitude and godly heart. And if we respect that authority, God's going to bless it. Mm-hmm. What happens is things get out of whack. You know, people like in the church that I was in, they were in the positions of authority, but they didn't have servants' hearts. They didn't have even you could really question, do these people really have a love for God or love for other people? They don't seem to, those, the people that got me out of that church, one of them said, you're forming a church within a church. And I said, what? Yeah, all these new people that are coming in, you know, basically saying we don't like them. You know, we're the church, and they're not welcome here.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that was, and I thought, and they were running the church, and I thought, there's something terribly wrong here with having that attitude. Mm-hmm. And I wish they would have changed. You know, I was nice to, no matter. Here's the thing, too. No matter how mean they were to me and what they said, I was always nice to them in return. I never badmouthed them. I've had people yell and scream at me, and God just, peace would be on me. I just stay calm. I thought, okay, Lord. One of the things that I saw as I wrote this book, I started looking at the prophets in the Old Testament and the New Testament apostles, and I started seeing how, wait a minute, these godly people were attacked even back then. Mm-hmm. They were going, you know, they had prophet abuse back then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nowadays, you know, they persecuted the prophets.
There was a big one. I was out of town for a couple months in the summer of 2012, and so I couldn't do two episodes. And one of the episodes, what I did was I put up some materials that I thought were very fruitful by others as podcast episodes, not being able to do interviews. And one of them that I put up was a sermon by Phil Johnson out at Mike Abendroth's church, Bethlehem Bible Church in Massachusetts, on Korah. And it was called Korah's Rebellion. And it was all about mm-hmm. Korah and how he tried to overthrow Moses because he thought he was the rightful heir of Moses' position.
Yep.
You brought that up as well in the book. I noticed too that you brought up Korah when you're talking about those prophets.
Yeah, and that's a lot of times. There's several things that cause this. One I list in the book: unrealistic expectations, where people will have just unbelievable expectations for a pastor. Nobody can live up to it, but they're there.
Yeah,
and the other thing is a struggle for power. You know, and who's in charge, who's in authority, and, you know, and we always have to go back. I think I would challenge everybody to go back and say, listen, authority comes by submitting to God. You know, that's what he says. Mm-hmm. When he says, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. And so the Bible continually talks about submitting to God, and that's what the Roman centurion, we came to Jesus, you know, he uh-huh. said, all you have to do is say the word, and he'll be healed. You know, I am under authority, and I say to my soldiers, go, and he'll go, and come, and come. All you got to do is say the word.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what the Roman centurion was saying was the principle of authority is I'm getting my authority by submitting, and we've lost that in the church a lot of times. You know, we've almost taken on the world's idea of authority. Of gaining power, I'm the boss, I'm in charge. When and the church is just the opposite. The authority comes by submitting, humble ourselves, and submitting to Him.
Yeah,
and so that's the principle of how churches should be run: is respect for authority, respect for other people.
Well, I was really intrigued, and I want to make sure we talk about and have plenty of time for is with all the interviews you did of all the other pastors that this happened to. And then your own experience as well. What are the typical, like, it seemed like there was almost like a script that is followed almost verbatim in many cases in all these different churches with all these different pastors. It's just like the actors are changed around a little bit. Can you walk us through that kind of that game plan of how pastors are brought into these situations and then ultimately either fired or forced to resign or?
Yeah, I call it the typical pastor abuse scenario because this is when I interviewed people, what happened to me and what happened to just about everybody I talked to, it was the same script. And it starts off with innocent sounding suggestions that the pastor might do differently. You know, somebody goes, you know what, you need to be doing this a little bit differently. And it usually, and sometimes, contests his leadership in some way to see whether he's going to, you know, whether he's going to do what is expected of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if he doesn't realize that, you know, there's a seriousness here, there will be another reminder. You know, we've talked about this before. This needs to change. And so if the change doesn't happen, what happens is the person that comes against the pastor will start spreading this with other people and say, well, have you noticed this? And don't you think this needs to be different? Kind of throwing out trial balloon statements to see where the person is in the congregation. Innocent sounding, yeah, right.
They kind of have a point.
Yeah, well, don't you think this, you know, should happen? So they start sharing their concerns with others, and what happens is the information gets stretched. You know, the incident that happens gets, you know, like. The pastor starts getting to be made out as the bad guy that, you know, he's got these flaws here, and the magnifying's put on him to show every inadequacy he has. Now, if you do that with anybody, they're going to start looking pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, so when you're there every week and you're preaching and you're doing whatever, the people with the magnifying glasses are going to, you know, it's what you look for, what you see. You know, if you want to see, I think one of my favorite illustrations, I think, is when Moses sent the 12 spies into the promised land. They all looked at, all of them went in there. They saw the same thing. They came back. 10 of them had a bad report, and 2 of them had a good report. You know, yeah, it's land of milk and honey. Let's go get it. You know, the other one said, no, there's giants in the land. They looked at the same land, but they focused on different things. 2 of them focused on what was good. 10 of them focused on what was bad. Now, yeah, there were giants in the land. I mean, it's not like there weren't. But, you know, what we focus on, there's good and bad in every situation. There's good and bad in every pastor and every church. God wants us, and Paul talks about this in Philippians chapter 4, to whatever's good and of good report and honorable, let your mind dwell on these things. Whatever we make the biggest thing in our mind will become the thing that we're going to focus on. And so what happens is when the faults get magnified, that's when the problems start happening in the church. And if they get enough people complaining about them, and you know, they'll start writing letters, making phone calls. Back in the olden days, people used to call before they had the caller ID and cell phone, stuff like that. You could call and you wouldn't know who was calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would call. I've talked to some people that the pastor would get called in the middle of the night and the phone would hang up. And one of the guys I interviewed said, I was called at least 100 times in the middle of the night.
Wow.
With nobody on the phone. Some of the stories, just horror stories of hate mail being written to the pastor, you know, telling them letters, you know, go to hell, get out of here. We don't want you here anymore. All of that kind of stuff. So those kind of things start happening and the heat gets turned up a little bit more. And then this leads usually to a secret meeting that's called the people that are against the pastor. They say, you know, we've had enough. And so they will meet secretly. And that's what happened when I went to the mall, and they were having a secret meeting without telling me, because I thought, you know, why are they having a deacon's meeting? We've always had them at the church. Well, I was so ignorant, I just couldn't figure it out. I had no idea that they were mad at me. And actually, it wasn't. It was only 2 guys.
Wow.
It was 2 guys that were mad at me. But you know what? They convinced the other ones by these, you know, by going, oh, hitting them again and again and again and again and again, that finally at the end, the guys that were supporting me ended up turning against me. I thought, what? I don't understand. What did I do to you? I didn't have done anything. But it really came down to the point, and it does in a lot of churches, that you either go with the ones, and I point this out in the book, that sometimes that people have been friends a long time, they're going to go with their friends, or if they've known them a long time, they'll go with them more than a guy that's been the pastor for 2 years or whatever. So I thought, well, we'll just get rid of him and get a new guy in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it happens, is they tend to go with the friendship over whether it's right to support the pastor or not. And it's a difficult thing, but, you know, we got to do what God says is the right thing, whether our friends go along with it or not.
Right.
So there's always the secret meetings involved. Sometimes there's more than that. And by now, the pastor just can't. I know with me, you can't sleep at night. You toss and you turn. You're thinking, what are they up to now? Mm-hmm. You know, and eventually, it's going to come to a called meeting where all of the gripes and complaints are going to come out against the pastor. And I remember one of the guys that I talked to, he said they called, it was a Wednesday night meeting, they called him in, and he said they started accusing him of stealing from the church. He says, that was impossible, I couldn't even touch the money. They called me a liar. He says, it's like they got out a machine gun and started attacking me. And he said, the sad thing about it is I had my family there that night, my kids were watching this, my parents were watching this, and he says, I'll never forget the look of horror on their face when they started yelling at me and screaming at me and demanding I leave. he said it was so hateful. And he says, I just put my hands in my face and I just broke down and cried. And says, and that's another thing I hear people say, you know, that a lot of times pastors end up standing alone because people are afraid to come to their defense. Mm-hmm. It's easier to stay on the sideline to go, well, I don't want to cause any problem, because it forces, you know, it would force them to stand up and take a stand for the pastor. So in many cases, the pastor has to stand alone, him and his family, and there's just not enough support, and so he has to leave. But if, in a lot of cases, what I found out is that a lot of times the majority really is with the pastor. They're just afraid to say anything. And if they would stand up, and some people say, well, why would, you know, why do the sheep have to protect the shepherd? Because, you know, isn't he supposed to be protecting them? And, you know, that is true. You know, the sheep, the shepherd does protect the sheep from false doctrines and that sort of thing. But it, I compare it to, like, if you're put on trial in a court of law and all you have is people accusing you and you don't have anybody getting in that chair and defending you, you're going to look guilty.
You need friendly witnesses.
Yeah, you need to have friendly people to give the whole story, because, you know, there's always going to be somebody that doesn't like you. But, you know, yeah, what? Really, it boils down to, you know, if the majority of people are for you, you know, you can get through about anything. But if they're not going to stand, you know, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So a lot of pastors just, you know, if nobody stands up for them, and I remember telling one other guy told me, it's coming to my mind now, another pastor I talked to, he had gotten out of the ministry. He had been in the ministry. He turned into a mechanic, and I ran into him when my car was being worked on. And he told me a story. I used to be a pastor, and he told me that one of the business meetings, they tore into him, and as he was leaving out of the meeting, one of his friends came and says, I can't believe they tore into you like that. And he said, why didn't you say anything? And he said, I just had to get out of the ministry. It's just too hard on me and too hard on my family. And that's really why most people get out of the ministry. Did you know that 95% of the people that go through seminary are out of the ministry by retirement?
That's 95%. Incredible. Absolutely.
Because incredible. It's too hard on their family. They can't take it. It, you know, I've thought about it many times too. My wife goes, you know, I don't know if I can take this anymore, you know, and it's hard. It's hard on me. You know, I've gotten where I can take it, and I've just gotten used to it. You know, you get criticized or whatever. I just go, well, Lord, I'm just taking it for you. But when my wife breaks down and starts crying, you know, that just tears my heart out.
Yeah.
And I remember one time when we were going through a difficulty, she broke down crying and just sobbing. And she said, all we've tried to do is love these people, and all we get in return is hate. And it just, I mean, I remember that just went in my heart, just in like a knife. And I said, yeah. Oh, God, how can I keep being a pastor? I just don't know how I can go on. It's just too hard, God. It's just too hard. But, you know, the grace of God, I'm still here.
Yeah.
been years. And I'm just, you know, I'm almost 61 years old. And I'm looking for the finish line. You know, we're running a race. We're running a spiritual race. And when my life's over, I'm crossing that finish line. And I want to be faithful to the end. I want God to be pleased with me. There's only one audience I'm trying to please, and that's God Almighty, Jesus yeah. Christ.
Amen.
And so, but it's difficult to shepherd the people, you know, and here's the hard thing is it doesn't matter, you know, if you preach a sermon and 100 people come and says, man, that's the greatest sermon I've ever heard. If that one person comes up and says, wow, man, you didn't say, you know, I hated that sermon. You'll think about the one person who
yeah.
didn't like it. So, you know, that's part of the ministry.
Yeah. Well, I think also it's important to keep in mind that the Lord talked about how the tares would be sown among the wheat. And he commands the angels not to pull them out, leave them for the last day.
That's right.
And it's hard to bring that home to your own congregation and realize, but the more godly your church is, the more likely you will have tares, and tares look a lot like wheat, you know, will be sown in there. And that's partly why I wanted to walk through that thing, is because I mean, this is a really tough thing for the pastor alone to go through, but the church as a whole. And so I guess where I'm trying to lead is, I want to talk a little bit about what, first of all, what can pastors do to be prepared for something like this that could happen? And then on the other side, what can the congregants do who love their pastor to help make sure that it never does happen?
Those are great questions. One thing is, I think a pastor needs to, well, first of all, when you're called to a church or, you know, you come to a church as the pastor, I think you need to lay out your expectations and the things that you believe and get everything out on the table ahead of time so they know and everyone knows where you are, hopefully before you come, so that when you are called, you know, you already know certain things. But, you know, I think I'm just speaking for myself. What I try to do is, you know, when people don't agree with me or the way I do things, I try to my best to do what I can to show love to the person. If there's something I need to change that's not that big a deal, I will try to change it if it's a legitimate thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to be able to change everything. So, but there are some pastors that aren't willing to budge in anything, you know. And there's also people on the other side that aren't willing to budge. But if we're going to get along, you have to agree to disagree on some things. The other thing that you're talking about with the
congregation,
the people in the congregation, I think, you know, just being nice to your pastor. I would say, if just be nice to me. That, you know, we have this pastor appreciation thing in October, and to be honest, I've always not liked that. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I haven't liked it for a certain reason. I think there's been, in the past, there's been insincere people that you know, give you a gift or do something, and it's kind of like the only time they've ever done it. Uh-huh. I would rather you be nice to me all the time and don't give me anything. Just be nice to the pastor and be understanding. And, you know, the Bible talks about, I never hear of too many sermons on this, but, you know, when you talk about the fruit of the Spirit, uh-huh. One of the attributes of the fruit of the Spirit is kindness. Kindness. There needs to be more sermons on that. Being nice to people, you know, isn't that what we're supposed to be?
Uh-huh.
You know, be nice to people. And even the people that aren't believers, even the people that are rude to you. I went into a store the other day, and this person that was there was waiting on me, and I could tell she didn't really want to. She was just short and rude and everything. And as I was leaving, I thought, man, this lady wasn't real nice, because they worked on a commission at the store, and it had something not to do with commission, but she had to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And as I was leaving, I thought, man, I said to her, thank you for taking the time and helping me. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to be nice to this lady, even though she wasn't nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we need to do as Christians, as believers. We need to be nice to everybody. I don't care how mean they are, or how much you disagree with them. Just be nice to people. That's what Jesus wants.
Yeah,
we're missing that.
I find a lot of times that when you're in a confrontation and with somebody who's not so nice, that sometimes just being nice will help you get further towards getting what you're after. If you're dealing with a customer service person or whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And it, you know, and if as Christians in the church, we ought to be the leaders in this. Uh-huh. We ought to be the models of this. And we need to be ashamed if we're not that way. Again, we're not going to agree on every point. I'm sure you and I could sit down and we could talk about, you know, differences. You'll sit down with anybody and eventually you're going to find somebody you're not going to agree with them on it. But you know what? It's not that big a deal. It's okay. You know, Paul even wrote about this in Romans. You know, he said, one person regards one day above the other, you know, and the other one says every day's light, and, you know, let each be convinced in his own mind. You know, I thought that's interesting. You know, he said, you know, if you have the right heart, you can even believe the wrong thing and it's okay.
Yeah.
Because God's looking at our hearts. He's looking at our hearts more than our minor doctrinal differences. You know, it doesn't matter. We believe in Jesus Christ. He's the Savior. He died for our sins. And, you know, so much of this other stuff is not nearly as important as loving the brethren. And Jesus talks about in the book of John, by this all men will know that you're my disciples if you have love for one another. And what a testimony of, you want to show people what, you know, what Jesus is really like? Just love other people.
Yeah. You also mentioned earlier just standing up for the pastor. And hopefully things don't get that far down the road. A part of why I wanted to walk through kind of that typical scenario was so people would see warning signs and know how to maybe to step up even before it comes to the meeting where the pastor's beaten down and whatnot, but standing up for him as well.
Yeah, you do. You have to be, if there are those that are vocally against the pastor, I think that's a sign that if he's not doing anything morally wrong, after, you know, if they're, and that's what we're talking about. If you're doing something morally wrong or something that's like heresy or something,
yeah.
I mean, you know, there are some legitimate reasons why you need to, and you can still do it in love. You don't have to be mean and angry.
Right.
As I've said, I've had a number of people over the years scream at just hatefully at me in the church. And I'm just going, and you claim to love God? You know, and you claim to respect authority, and you're acting like this.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point that it takes courage a lot of times to stand up for what's right and stand up behind the person that God has called to be the shepherd of that flock. You know, it's easy to get intimidated by people. And in Peter, it talks about do not fear their intimidation, because intimidation is not a good, I mean, that's not the Holy Spirit when you're intimidating people.
Right.
It's coming from the enemy. And so you have to, it takes courage to do that. Paul talks about that. He says, you know, the defense of my faith, he says, nobody stood with me. I stood alone, and God's going to reward them for what they did. So there is a judgment that's going to happen when we do things out of God's will, or people do things out of God's will who are attacking God's messengers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who the prophets were, God's messengers, and the apostles and Jesus himself, Paul, all of them were God messengers, and they all, you know, they all were attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes, and that's one reason why it's so hard to be a pastor, because there is a spiritual warfare that we're in.
Yeah. I noticed something through going through this, like reviewing this in order to talk about with on the podcast tonight, some of the ministry philosophies that can bring about some of these confrontations and stuff. And I guess what I'm getting at is you talked about in the book about pastors who would want to get into more seeker stuff, want to bring unbelievers into the church and make disciples of them. And I think on the flip side, I've also seen, you know, I've got a listener that I've befriended in the last 6 or 8 weeks that I just learned a few weeks ago, went through a church split as well. And it was kind of an opposite thing. They brought in a pastor who insisted on verse by verse preaching, and the more they got into verse by verse preaching, the more reformed they got, more Calvinistic they got. And people didn't like that. They caused a big rift in their church, and they didn't like that sort of change. But change seems to be a consistent thread through it, that somehow either the pastor wants to change and the congregation doesn't, or the congregation wants the pastor to change and he doesn't. What's the more proper and honorable way to deal with that change as it comes up in a church?
That's a tough question, and that really is one of the points in there. The fear of change is one of the things that causes people to get angry, because people don't like change. But you know what? Growing things change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, change for the sake of change isn't, you know, that's not good. Right. Just to be changing, there needs to be a purpose behind it. And, you know, I think if it's glorifying God, if God's blessing it, if God's bearing fruit, you know, we need to move along with what God, with what God's doing. It's easy to stay in the rut of doing the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
That's the easiest thing to do. But God calls us to change. And like I said, yeah, you're exactly right. Because it could be, in some churches, it's the music changing or it's the clothes changing, you know, wearing, you know, the clothes, you know, clothes they're loosening. Some people, you know, not wearing suits and they're going over to something else. And so that's a change. And those are the things that tend to cause churches to split. And, you know, I think that I'd like to, you know, I thought about this too, being able to write a book on saying how to have a nice church split. So, you know, can we just shake hands and say, okay, you know, you do that and we'll do this and we'll still be friends, you know, whatever. There almost needs to be that. I don't know if it'd sell very many books though. But I would just say,
well, it's unfortunate that this kind of book needed to be written as well, though.
Well, it is. And I was surprised because when I first wrote it, as I said, I self-published this, which means I did it myself, and I had no idea how many people would buy the book. Mm-hmm. But I thought that there were a lot of people, and I wrote it particularly for pastors because I knew that some of them were going through it, and I started selling them, and then they started moving into the hundreds and hundreds of books being sold. And people, and what I found was that this was going, a lot of churches were buying this book to distribute to other people in the church so they could understand what was going on. Because this is so new, you know, a lot of this was new to a lot of churches. We've never been through this before. What's happening? And so they read the book and they go, oh, this is what's happening. This is why it's happening. And this isn't just happening here. It's happening everywhere. And it's happening across denominational lines. And so really I wrote it for pastors, but it's gone beyond that to the churches as well. And I've had a lot of, I haven't kept track of how many people have called me or written back and says, man, that really helped us get through this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way I could step in the situation and do it, but there were principles or something they read in the book that they could apply and said, you know, that this is what we needed to do in this situation in response to what's happened here. It's kind of sad. I think the Lord just weeps when he sees conflict in churches. It just breaks his heart many times. But, you know,
on the other hand, we gotta keep in mind that he is sovereign through it all as well.
He is. And he can bring good out of it. And he has. Mm-hmm. He has done that. And some people have grown a lot stronger in their faith going through something like that. And the sad thing is there's some people that have been wounded and they just drop out because of the conflict they've seen. They drop out of church. And I try to tell people, I said, look, don't put your faith in – your faith is not supposed to be in a church or a denomination or even a pastor. You know, your faith is in Jesus Christ. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever, even if people down here mess it up.
Yeah.
You know, your faith is in him. So,
and my own thought, I guess, is as someone who's listening, if perhaps their pastor is taking the church in a direction they're not comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
I guess my suggestion for the way to deal with that is that if you really think that he's wrong and you can't come to a consensus or at least agree to disagree or be friendly and. Like I said, just agree to disagree. I think that might be the time to just move on, rather than try to drag a whole church into such a drag out, you know, fisticuffs kind of, I want to get my way kind of thing.
You know, you are exactly right. It is okay to change churches. I mentioned that in the book as well, that look, if you don't like the direction, you don't have to. You don't have to stay there. It's okay to move on to another congregation and that you feel more comfortable in, and still, you know, keep your peace with God and still love the people, even though you might not agree with them. But sometimes we, you know, build little empires, you know, and defend them.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking of the big picture of the God's kingdom.
Yeah, and I say that understanding that sometimes it's easier said than done, you know, especially if you've been in a church for decades in some cases.
That's right.
You've seen people come and go, and you've you maybe have some influence because you've been there so long, and you've made friendships and bonds, and people trust you, and you trust them. And, you know, I understand there's a, this isn't just as easy as maybe it's time to go, but you know, maybe it is. With that said,
and that is right, because people form friendships with other people after being there a long time. But then what happens is many times, and this is what we got to guard against, is while we're there, why are we going to church? We're there to worship God. We're worship there to love the Lord, to serve the Lord, and you know, it's not about power and who's in charge and you know all these other things. It's okay. I mean, to if you feel like the Lord's leading you somewhere else, it's okay to let go. And I've even told people that have left my church before, and it's kind of funny that I've seen this happen a lot. People will go, you know, well, I'm not sure if I'm happy here and where you're leading us and all that. And I said, okay, well, you know, it's okay. They said, we feel like we're going to leave. I said, you know, that's all right. We'll stay friends, blessing and everything. And then they'll go visit some other churches, and then they come back and they say, you know what? We kind of like this church best after all. We looked everywhere else. So by them going and looking somewhere else, it changed their attitude, and they thought, you know, this wasn't as bad as we thought it was. Uh-huh. But it really is, it's, you know, I've known people that have gone to other congregations, and they form new friendships when they go there.
Yeah.
And
you don't have to break the friendships of the church that you might leave.
Yeah. And that is right. You don't have to break friendships. Let me just put out a theoretical thing. So here's this church going in a certain direction, and maybe they've changed some things up. Maybe they don't like their music, or maybe they, you know, some other kind of style of something they're doing, they don't like it or whatever. And then they go, you know, that's not me anymore. I always liked this. And so they end up going to another church and find out that this is what I like here. Well, can't you worship there and still be friends with the other place? Yeah. I mean, it's not like you own it. Uh-huh. And that's the problem, is people get an ownership attitude of a church. I own this church. That's the dangerous thing. Yeah. And somebody thinks, I own this church, or I own this pew even, you know, that I sit in. But some people do that.
I think part of the difficulty is that when a church is really functioning the way God means it to function, it becomes a family. The people end up being just as close to you as your physical family, your blood family.
Well, that's right. And it should be, you know, kindred spirit. And, you know, the odd thing about, we forget this, is that we're all going to be together, you know, and when we get to heaven, all our differences aren't going to matter. We're going to be where we are. There is, you know, one body of Christ, even though there's different names on churches and so forth. So I think if people can think, if they're in a church and they don't like, you know, the direction or whatever, that they can, you know, go, you know, if they feel like the Lord's leading them to go somewhere, follow what the Lord's telling you to do, and you're to be pleasing to Him. But again, we don't cancel out the other commands that He gave about loving one another. There's so much in the Bible about the way we talk about other people. Man, there's so much about that. And we shouldn't be gossiping about people. We shouldn't be slandering people. You know, the Bible talks about when they curse you, give a blessing instead. And if we would just do, what's the shameful thing is, people can go to church for all these years and still not get it the way we're supposed to be living.
Yeah.
And we should be bearing fruit, the fruit, you know, of the Spirit that God calls us to bear. And part of that is learning to get along with people that don't believe exactly like you.
Yeah. I did, just to mention rather quickly, I don't want to get too off the track, but I did an interview May of 2012 with a friend of mine named Dr. Kevin Bowder, who teaches over at Central Seminary. And he was a contributor in a book called The Spectrum of Evangelicalism. There's four different authors, and that was what our interview was about. And the one thing I wanted to bring from that interview into this one was how there are circles of fellowship, and that he really stressed, he's a fundamentalist is how he would describe himself. So he was on the far right side of the spectrum, and that's what he wrote mm-hmm. on. But what he really had to offer, and I thought was very valuable, was talking about the spheres of fellowship, and how your congregation, if it's functioning properly, should be those you have the closest fellowship and you're probably going to agree with the most. But then as you go out, he was he's a fundamentalist Baptist, but he might go and fellowship with the Presbyterian church down the street. They disagree over baptizing babies, but they're not in the same congregation. And so they can have a little bit looser mm-hmm. fellowship, and it's the second circle. They might agree more mm-hmm. or less on all of the other doctrines and just disagree on baptism. And then there might be another doctrine that they disagree on with another church. Maybe they disagree on eschatology, so the sphere gets a little bigger and a little looser. And so if your church is kind of drawing out of that first sphere, or you're not in that first sphere with your church, you know, it's better and more you have more integrity and more honor if you will seek out the congregation that maybe does still have that same style and to hold to the same doctrines that you hold to, and bring yourself back into a tight fellowship like that.
That is a great point. That is excellent. And that really is true, the circles that you're in. And it's kind of like, let me just give one that some can identify with. You know, some people that just love hymns and love singing the hymns. And then there's some that want to sing the new songs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both groups are worshiping the Lord. They just like different styles. Now, some listeners may not agree with that, but that's the truth. You know, if that's what Paul's talking about in Romans 14, you know, that one, you know, has one day above the other, you know, the Sabbath, and the other one's every day alike. But he says, let each be, we live for the Lord and we die for the Lord. Whether we live or die, we're the Lord's. And so in that, I can just say, as you were telling that story about the different circles, I thought, I can identify with that, because I have gone to pastor breakfasts or, you know, fellowships with associations in the town, you know, where all of the different pastors are there, and we don't agree on every point of doctrine, you know, where there are differences there, but we, when we're together, we're centered on what we agree on, and we don't talk about the things we disagree on when we're together. I mean, because, you know, we know, you know, this is what you believe, and this is what I believe. But one of the things I've learned is I can't make anybody believe anything.
Right.
You know, I can't force you to believe something. You've got to come to that realization.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. I think, you know, the faith that we have, we need to have with sincerity before the Lord. And I'm always trying to, when I seek the Lord, Lord, am I believing correctly on this? Change my mind if I'm not. I want to be accurate. And then when I run into people that disagree, I just learned, you know, I'm going to love the person, and I'm not, you know, it'd be so easy to say, well, you don't believe this, and then start a fight and a disagreement, and, you know, that just doesn't work if you're ever going to get along with anybody. That was a really good illustration where we talk about the different circles, the first circle and the second circle.
Yeah, thank you. And that's, if anybody didn't hear that one and you want to, that was, I believe it, episode 49. It would have been May of 2012, so echozoe.com/49. But I was also going to come back to Ephesians 2:8-9, and I, you know, being more reformed myself and in a reformed church, we put a lot of emphasis on God's sovereignty. And so I go to Ephesians 2:8-9, where it says, for grace you've been saved through faith, and this, that being your faith, not your own doing, it is the gift of God, but the result of works that no one can boast. And realizing, you know, we have hard times sometimes with people who don't see things the way we see them. But mm-hmm. we always come back to the fact that even our faith itself is a gift from God, and we give him the glory and the honor for bestowing that on us. It's not by our own wisdom or might that mm-hmm. we've come where we are.
Yes. Yeah, and I do believe in the sovereignty of God too, and that's a whole another subject about how God can oversee things that and turn things around for good, even yeah. That are evil, because he's in charge, he rules.
Yeah. Providence is a really amazing thing.
It is amazing. You look at the life of Joseph and what he went through, and how, you know, God's orchestrating all that. I like to liken it to a chess game between heaven and earth, and you know, and I call it the big hand and the little hands. The little hands do a thing, but the big hand moves the chess piece, and he ends up winning.
Yeah.
So I've learned, especially, you know, when you go through a difficult time, when whatever it may be fired from your job or some other thing that happened maybe unjustly to you, that you have to trust that God is in control and he can lead you to a better path, even though you've been through this horrible thing.
Yeah.
And I it takes faith to believe that he really is in control.
Right.
But he is. And, yeah. And we have promises in his word that if we'll trust him, he will work it together for good. If we love him, called right. according to his purpose.
Yeah. I'd like to close with two things. We're getting kind of towards the end of our time. First of all, I always like to ask if there's anything else that maybe didn't get brought up or any other points that you think would be beneficial to add to the discussion. And then second is, how can people find the book and how can they find you and learn more if they're so interested?
Well, I don't know if we've covered the subject fairly well. There's a lot more in the book. It is written for pastors, but I think people in churches probably need to read it too to understand what the pastor goes through. But if people go to my website, kentcrockett.com, Crockett with two T's, kentcrockett.com. Book is on there, as long as, and my other books are on there as well. And also, I have a devotionals blog that I write once a week. I have about 500 or 600 people that receive it by email. They can go to my website and click on devotionals, and you can sign up by email. And I send out just a little story with the scripture that you can apply to your life once a week. So I think that might be so a lot of people have written me and said they really enjoy reading those things. Okay. They encourage them.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I did mention that I have some firsthand experience with the subject of the book, and I'm glad I didn't have to. That I was able to control it and not bring too much into it, because, like I said, I didn't want to reopen wounds. I'm hoping that we can restore and mend some of the wounds that were opened in my own experience. But that's how I came across the book. Was somebody in our church had found it as we were going through a tough time, and it was very helpful for us. And just like you're mentioning, you know, it was pretty quick that a lot of people were getting their hands on it.
Well, you know, one of the things is when you go through conflict, a lot of times you can hold hurts, and you have to forgive and move on. Mm-hmm. And there is one other book I wrote called Slaying Your Giants, and there's a chapter in there on forgiveness called Who Is in Your Dungeon. Mm-hmm. That when I preached certain places, I've had tons of people respond to that message saying how it set them free. So it's in the book, Slaying Your Giants, and there's some other things. I think that's another book that people might be interested in reading that covers 20 invisible giants that we fight every day.
Okay.
So.
Well, Ken, I thank you so much. I really appreciate your taking the time with me and talking about, you know, what has been a painful subject for many people. I appreciate going over it, and I hope that listeners will benefit from it, and hopefully they'll benefit in such a way that they won't have to go through some of the more painful aspects of how some of this plays out in different churches.
Well, I hope so too. And as I say, I have been hurt and wounded going through these things, but you forgive and you move on, and God does heal, and, you know, I'm not hurting anymore. You want to get over it. Want to get over it, and you want to move on, because if you're looking backward, you're not going to get anywhere. You have to look forward to what God has for you now.
Yeah, and in our own experience, we had some pain, but we've had massive blessings through it too. So, I keep that in mind as well. It's God works all things for good to those who love Him and are called according to His purposes.
That's right. So,
well, thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a comment or would like to contribute a question to an upcoming interview, leave us a voicemail. You can do so by calling area code 425-906-4908. Whenever possible, we'll announce upcoming topics and guests so that you can offer questions for the show. You can find those announcements on the website or on our social media sites. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or add us to your Google Plus circles to get the latest news and announcements from Echo Zoe Ministries.
Echo Zoe Radio is an outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries. If you are blessed by the show, please consider offering your support. There are many things you can do to help, including prayer, sharing the show with others, and your financial support. Echo Zoe Ministries is a registered nonprofit organization with 501c3 tax-exempt status, and your donations are tax-deductible. For more information about how you can support Echo Zoe Ministries, please visit echozoe.com/support. Well, that wraps up episode 67. Thanks for listening to Echo Zoe Radio. For more information and show notes, visit echozoe.com/67. Don't forget to check out the details of the Logic series that Eric Dahma and I are teaching at Gospel of Grace Fellowship. The first three sessions are available as digital video downloads at the Echo Zoe online store, which can be found at echozoe.com/store. Or just click on the Logic banner at the top of the homepage. Lord willing, we'll be back next month for the December episode of Echo Zoe Radio.